At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
Yes, he is. And this is Playing with Science. Today we only have the one guest. He's not a rock star, a film star, or even a sporting legend, but he is British. So not only will he be splendid, he will most likely live in a castle and have an army of butlers, just like everyone else does in Britain.
Absolutely. Yes. I've heard that about you guys.
It's true.
Yes. Professor David James is, however, a sports engineer with enough published work to open his own library. He's also conducted research for sportswear giant, as Gary would put it, Adidas.
Thank you.
And worked with the world governing body of soccer, aka, I say this for you once again, football.
Thank you.
Better known as FIFA.
Yes.
Along with many others.
And last year he spoke at What Makes a World Champion seminar. So if that's what you are aiming for, then stick around. We will do our best to get the answer out of him by hook or by crook.
Yeah.
Also, we'll be answering questions of your own selection and making. So stick around. If you pose some questions, we'll get the good professor to answer those as well. Best introduce him properly.
We should indeed, especially since he's one of your countrymen and he's actually coming to us from his home in Sheffield.
Fabulous. So director of the Center for Sport Engineering Research at Sheffield Hallam University and a man who has got involved in so many different things, it could take a series of shows to cover them all. So let's get straight into things. And so David James, welcome to Playing with Science. So as we can all start on a firm footing, can you explain what it is you actually do?
So I'm an engineer by training. So I started off life as a mechanical engineer. But what I do is I try and, I suppose, use technology, engineering techniques to improve sports equipment. I have a great team. We're an academic group, so we're in the Sheffield Hallam University. I've got about 20 staff and about 20 PhD students. And we look at how we can use technology in sport. We use it to make athletes perform better. So we do loads of work with our Olympic teams, looking at all sorts of aspects of technology in sport. You know, the equipment that people wear, but also how we measure them. Data, you know, intelligence around training, all sorts of different things, but it's all around technology. And we also look at how we can prevent injuries and actually make sport more accessible for people. So it's not just the elite, but actually how you can use design and innovation to encourage, you know, physical activity and participation in sport, which is a massive, massive issue, you know, for the health and happiness of our populations as well.
I told you it was a series, didn't I?
You've got your engineering tentacles in every single area of sport, where no matter where it is.
Yeah, okay, so do you design, create original features?
Yeah.
Or are you one of those groups that kind of, someone like Adidas or any other body comes to you and says, this isn't working as well as it should, help?
Yeah, a bit of both, actually. So we do a lot of, sometimes we work before the design moment happens. So we'll be, so take what we do with Adidas. So we're trying to understand how different players, in soccer, move differently on different surfaces, whether they're playing on synthetic turf or natural turf or the new hybrid turf.
Yeah.
And actually, that what that does is that provides information for the design team to come up with products to best match the shoe with the movement on the surface. Mm. So sometimes we do the very sort of fundamental research to give the ideas for the design work, figuring out, yeah, so how does this person move? What are they like? What are the conditions like? Equally, we also get involved sometimes when the product's been made and we test it to see, well, does it really work? Does it make any difference? You know, does it increase injury risk? Does it do these different things? So often we're about the ideas, the inspiration for the designs and the testing. And sometimes we do the design work ourselves as well. But actually, companies are quite good at that. So as a university, we're more like the knowledge partner.
So I read that you guys worked with Amy Williams. She's a British skeleton, right? She's a gold skeleton. Medalist skeleton, British skeleton in Vancouver.
Yeah, Winter Olympics.
And she, in Winter Olympics, and she was like 143 kilometers per hour is what she hit as a top speed. What did you guys do with her? Because I couldn't find exact. I knew that I found that you had worked with her, but I couldn't find what exactly did you do.
This is an interesting story. This actually, so it's kind of amazing what Team GB, so Team Great Britain, how they've done very well in the Olympics in recent years. Bearing in mind, in the Olympic Games in Atlanta, the Summer Olympics, we got just one gold medal. You know, we were like bottom of the medal table, and obviously in Rio, you know, we were second in the medal table, did incredibly well, and that's a huge transformation. So the whole high performance system has changed, and technology's been a key part of that story. In the skeleton bob, this one was actually a bit controversial because there are certain rules around what you can and can't do, and we kind of, you know, we push things right up to the limit of what the rules say you can do in terms of the design.
I read that other teams, of course USA, because you know when the USA loses, they're just like, something's terribly, terribly wrong. How is it that we can't lose? Anyway, so not just Team USA, but a couple other teams were saying that there was a controversy surrounding her skin suit and that her skin suit gave her an unfair advantage. How so?
So the rules on the skin suit weren't particularly clear. They're a little bit ambiguous, mm-hmm. and we're open to debate about what you could and couldn't do. But essentially, we had, it's kind of hard to describe, but the from the helmet, we had part of her skin suit kind of, there's a bit of structure to her shoulders.
Oh.
So it kind of gave this nice profile from her head to her shoulders.
Brilliant.
Which provided a fantastic, a small aerodynamic advantage.
Right.
And it wasn't overly clear if that was allowed or not in the rules. And some other teams didn't like it. Losing teams never like it.
Let me just say this, David. If Team USA bitched about that, that is the most un-American thing you could do, because there is nothing more American than taking ambiguous rules and using them to your advantage.
Yeah, that's what we do. That's you know, I believe in, you know, fair sport, good competition. But actually, the modern world of sport, you know, pushing things to the limit within the rules is what you do.
Right.
You're there to win. You're not there to, you know. Okay, look, I have quite strong feelings on this, but sport isn't a level playing field. Athletes get up in the morning to be better than their opponent. They want to train harder, get the right advice. It's all about getting an advantage. And the modern sports person really has to, you know, think of the whole picture and push things to the limit whilst not stepping over that limit.
Cool. What's your favorite project? What's the favorite project for you that you've been involved in and found successful?
Okay, that's good, actually. I really like that. So one of my favorite projects was working on goal line technology.
Oh, gosh, yep.
With FIFA. That's been a great fun thing to do. So... I work with FIFA helping them to basically decide whether goal line technology should be used in soccer. So this is a system which tracks where the ball is, mm-hmm. In a soccer match, and it basically tells the referee if it's a goal or not. So that's been a great project, actually. And so it's been really good to see a very sophisticated technology be introduced into the sport and actually change the culture of the sport, because soccer has always been quite resistant to technology. Yep. And I think it's really changed now, actually. And that's been a great journey to be part of.
So speaking of measurements and, you know, this goal line technology, let's kind of knead that dough and push it out to all other sports. Because if you think about the one thing that is common in all the sports is there's a human being who's making a judgment call. Yep. About a ball. Did that ball go over the plate? Is it a strike or a ball? Did that ball actually cross the line? Is it a goal? Did that football break the plane? Is it a touchdown? So when you look at that, if you were to make that measurement so that there was no need of a referee, do you think that's a good thing for sports or a bad thing for sports?
Well, it's difficult, really. I think for some sports at the top levels, the frankly, if you just look at the finance of it, you know, getting a decision wrong can cost hundreds of millions of pounds.
Yeah.
And it's fundamentally unfair, I think, to have a decision that's wrong be implemented, because it can totally change people's futures. Whole cities can be affected by that. If your team goes up or goes down,
true,
that's got massive implications. So some decisions are so important, they just have to be right. And you can see that, you know, in World Cups as well. It's maybe the money's not so important, but it's a massive, massive thing. You have to get it right. So I think for that, I think technology has a very good role to play. However, the concern is that technology comes at a price and a cost. And actually, at the lower levels of the sport, they might not ever be able to afford this. And so what that can do is it can actually pull the sport apart a little bit. You have different rules for the elite to sort of everyone else. And
right,
that's the challenge, because, you know, the idea is that someone who plays football or baseball, they're playing the same sport as their idols, the pros.
Right.
So it should be one sport, not different forms of the sport for different strategies of the game. So that's the real challenge. But, you know, technology is getting cheaper. Mm-hmm. Camera technologies, mobile technologies, computer technologies, it's all getting cheaper. And as the systems get more developed and you get more companies in the game, prices will come down. So hopefully it'll become more open to everyone else.
Maybe the two of you can explain something to me, because you just said like whole cities, their fate can be determined.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, we're not used to this here in America. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I just found this out this weekend, that when a soccer team or football team, like, okay, let's say Manchester United or, you know, Crystal Palace, whoever, when they win or lose, they can go up or down in standings that can get them put in or kicked out of a league.
Yeah. So
oh my God, this is insane. Who knew this? I'm telling you. So in football, it's completely socialistic. Okay. You can lose every single game and you are still in the NFL.
It's called the Cleveland Browns.
That's correct.
So
how's it working? How does this work?
Oh man, it's frightening. So, Professor, if you don't mind,
yeah,
you start August, you end in May. It may, if you finish in the bottom three, uh-huh, of the Premier League,
right,
your history, you get relegated to the division below.
Oh, my God.
This is what the professor means when he says whole cities.
Oh, my yeah. God.
And, you know, if you lose one game, well, okay, you don't like it, but you get on to the next one. But if you've been so bad and you finish in that bottom three, you're out of here. Now, you can imagine that in a World Cup. It's not just a city or a club.
Right.
It's a whole country.
Oh.
Can you imagine if it got robbed of a World Cup in the final? Oops. Once you drop that pebble in the pond, the ripples can be enormous.
Wow. And
such ramifications.
Wow.
And so I think it's interesting this I mentioned about cities. So it's interesting in the UK that a really good sort of soccer team can really put your city on the international map. When I travel around the world, I say, yeah, I'm from Sheffield. People say, well, where's Sheffield? And I say, oh, it's next to Manchester. And a lot of people know about Manchester because they know about Manchester United and Manchester City. Hmm. pretty much anywhere I go in the world, you know, because really, you know, throughout Africa and all over, people, oh yeah, I know Manchester, Manchester, Manchester. And so it really affects the standing or how people view your city. So right. it has very deep, profound effects, these decisions.
And Sheffield and being is a in the really Premier sporting League city.
Puts you in that top flight.
So you have two big soccer teams, Sheffield United, Sheffield Wednesday. Don't ask me about the Wednesday.
Sheffield Wednesday?
Yes.
is that anything like Taco Tuesday?
We'll talk. Then you have the Sheffield Steelers, which is a hockey team. Then you have the Don Valley Stadium, which is track and field. Not sure about basketball, but I'm thinking there is one. But that's so it's known as the
Steelers.
Thank you, Sheffield Sharks. So you've got a lot of sporting excellence in this area, as well as the good professor. And he doesn't have an army of butlers. He has a team. An army of PhDs.
Yes, an army of PhDs and PhD students.
I mean, he's just seen my butler and raised me an army of PhD graduates. Right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, more with, I'm going to call him a sports engineer, but it doesn't seem fair. It doesn't cover anywhere near the work that he does. But Professor David James will be with us when we get back.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Welcome back to Playing with Science. This is a fabulous conversation that Chuck and I are enjoying immensely with sports engineer David James, professor from Sheffield Hallam University in delightful Britain, or we call it England, really.
You sound a little homesick, my friend.
I know, I'm getting teary. So I said earlier on in the show that you spoke at a seminar about what makes a world champion. So, Professor, you're up. What makes a world champion? Is there a secret?
I think good athletes make world champions. Yeah. I think, you know... sometimes we get a little bit obsessed by the things that are going on behind the scenes, you know, the science, the engineering, the technology. Maybe we can make a champion, but actually it's the individual. And if you think about all athletes, great athletes, world-beating athletes, they're extreme outliers. They're not normal. They literally have bodies which are on the edge of normality. Mm-hmm. They really are outliers. So you have a brilliant kind of body to begin with, and mind and ability. So the athlete's at the core of it. But that isn't nearly enough, you know. And we know that basically great athletes are made mainly sort of by three key components. Talent. So that's the key thing, you know, what you're born with. The sort of the environment which that talent is then nurtured in. Yeah. And that comes from, you know, lots of things like, you know, did your mum and dad drive you to basketball kind of classes or whatever it is, or the team meets on a Wednesday evening, or did they get up early in the morning at 5 a.m. to take you to swimming? You know, those kind of environmental things are massively important. So champions are a product of that system, often by their parents and what the parents have given them when they were younger. And then people like me get involved later on when you've got someone who's already very good. We can then work with them a little bit to get them that tiny bit more. So what I do as an engineer, I'm never going to turn someone who's not good at sport into someone who's a world champion. They have to be very good already. We can make very small changes at the end, small savings in time, a little bit, you know, enhance their skills in some way through maybe virtual reality or different types of techniques. Improve strategy. We can do those kind of things, but you have to be very good to begin with. And I think the third thing, so I've mentioned two things: talent, opportunity. Well, so the environment, or maybe you might consider the opportunity. And then the third thing would be the drive from the individual. So the you know, that personal resilience to keep going when it's tough, and that personal drive. And I think when you're thinking about sort of maybe a national level, how do you come up with a great Olympic team? In a way, we can identify talent quite well. It's not precise science, but we're pretty good at picking out people who are going to be good. We can provide the right environment, but it's very hard to identify people who have got those really strong motivations, that willpower to do it. That's the kind of the guesswork. And some people have it and some people don't. And the best athletes have got all three. They've got that talent, they've had the opportunities, and they've got that drive as well. LeBron James. So I think it's those three things that make a world champion.
Yeah. Yeah. People like LeBron James who just tick that box and have that X factor. There is one of your published works, The Physics of Winning, because you're trying to remember your own works now, aren't you? You've done that many. I'm just thinking you've had your whole team of PhD students and graduates, and you've sat them down to come up with an equation. So you've kind of got your own equation for winning in physics. But is it quite that simple, or how did you approach something with that kind of title?
Yeah, I think so. This is the difference. So some sports are quite simple in a way.
Yeah.
So we call them. I call them linear sports. Like in a way, like running 100 meters or jumping the pole vault or a high jump or riding a bike around a track. But basically, those sports are measured by a single outcome, which is a time, or a distance, or a height, you know, and actually you can break that sport down into a number of key elements, like, okay, I need to have so much power delivered at this time, and I know I can deliver that amount of power out of my body, and that will achieve this speed on the bike if I optimize the bike. And you can basically make a very good prediction of what will happen. And so that's why the physics come in, because it's about the energy that the human body has, and then understanding how we use that energy to get what we need to get done. You know, we can tweak things like the aerodynamics on the bike or the body position on the bike and things like that to do it. So I'd say it's very deterministic. Mm. Like, in a way, I can predict what's going to happen to within a sort of a fraction of a second. And then when the athlete goes to do it, they'll do that. Take a sport like soccer, you know, baseball, American football. We can't do that. No. We can't make predictions, because you might have a plan. Yeah, I'm going to do this. Then what's the opponent doing? Mm. And then what are the interactions with the team? So we can use physics and mathematics to describe what will happen in sport in these very linear, simple sports, which are often measured in time or height or distance. When it comes to sort of sports, which are games, which have multiple players, all bets are off. It's too complicated a system to try to model.
So thank you for explaining that. You've done work with wearable tech, not just the sort of telemetrics tracking sort of thing, but and then you've gone on to discuss how it can prevent injury and you're analyzing impact. Can you expand on that a little bit more and exactly what areas you were working in?
Yeah, so we did a project recently with FIFA, the governing body for soccer,
yeah,
football. And we see this loads now where players are wearing devices, tracking devices.
Yeah.
Often they use like a GPS satellite type tracking technology, but there are many other technologies as well. They have other sensors in them as well, like we call them inertial sensors. So they've got accelerometers, rate gyros, magnetometers, these kind of different devices to measure what you're doing. The trouble with these devices is you have to wear them, and there's actually a potential risk of injury when you're wearing them. Hmm. So often these devices, they're worn at the top of the back.
Yeah.
And, you know, dare I say it, they're there to get good satellite coverage, so the satellite can see it very easily. It's not a bad place to put it because you don't see many collisions, but putting something on your spine, a hard object on your spine in a potentially, you know, violent environment, like,
well, what could go wrong? Come on, what could seriously go wrong? You've got a big hard thing on your back, right? I mean, come on, what could go wrong?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there are, so we did this big study for soccer, and we tried to understand what the injuries could be as players are wearing these devices, and we surveyed lots of medics and players who are wearing them, and we sort of identified these sort of injury scenarios. And then basically what we did was we, by kind of recreating that those impact events that we see in sport, we're able to improve the design of these devices, and actually is a sort of an impact test that they all have to pass now to be deemed to be safe or safe enough. I said this before, like, we can't ever make something 100% safe, but we can reduce its risk of injury. I think it's really interesting, and the NBA are doing exactly the same thing. I think it's even worse in basketball because you've got players potentially, you know, landing on a hard court.
Yeah.
They've got this hard device on their back. Okay, at the best, it might cause just a little laceration or a bruise, but at its worst, it could be worse.
Yeah.
So it's something that's being looked at quite a lot.
Unless you're a delicate flower like me, in which case it would be absolutely devastating.
Oh, gosh. Time to take another break after you've said that. Right, don't go away, Professor, because you are going to be back when we get back, and we will have Cosmic Queries here on Playing With Science and our Sports Engineering show. So don't go away.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Welcome back to Playing With Science and our Sports Engineering show with the wonderful Professor David James. And as promised, it's time for a cosmic query and your question.
So Jay Bailey, who is a Patreon patron, which means that we're going to start with his Jay's, because Jay could be a male or a female. We're going to start with Jay's question. because if you support us on Patreon, that's what happens. We give you a priority. My roller derby coach once commented that if humans were made to skate, our ankles would be on the front of our foot. I'm still a little puzzled about that. But what other changes to the human design could you imagine that would make human bodies more efficient for quad skates? What changes would you make for a roller skate? And it is Janelle. So Janelle is probably a girl from Chicago. What a wonderfully weird question, Professor.
I think it's actually, there's some really interesting stuff in that question.
Okay.
Actually. I think the first thing is that the idea of having sort of a, basically like an articulated joint on the front of the skate, like an ankle, is of course something which is done in speed skating. So in the 1980s, we had the clap skate. So this is a device which is in speed skating. It's very big in the Netherlands in the Winter Olympics. And the clap skate is a classic bit of fantastic sports engineering where actually by putting that extra joint in at the front, so it's basically what happens is that at the toe, the shoe can lift off the hard skate which remains on the surface. And it just subtly changes the biomechanics of the motion. And what that can do is it can actually improve the efficiency of the athlete. And the people who wear clap skates can go, you know, quite a bit faster using less energy. So
does
it's not a crazy
more power
idea,
to be delivered through the skate.
Extra joint. But of course, you know, if you think about the animal kingdom, plenty of animals have quite interesting locomotion. If you think about birds or ostriches, have kind of almost like a reverse knee.
Yep.
And they can run very fast as well. So yeah, it's quite interesting to think about different ways of being.
That's a great question, Janelle. Way
now,
to go.
And then we got a great answer. And yeah, those skates sound just perfect for me in the winter.
This is Noar21 from Instagram who says, what is the comparison of head injuries in football versus rugby? And I'll include soccer into that. So your football. Such as the severity of chances of having a head injury. Also, do the use of pads and a helmet in American football contribute to higher chances of injuries solely because of the hard material? So a lot of stuff packed into one question. You can unpack it any way that you want. But, you know, do you have any information on the comparison of head injuries for American football, your football, soccer, and perhaps rugby?
Yeah, so I think, look, this is probably the biggest topic facing sport at the moment in my world, this whole topic of concussion. You know, it's particularly relevant, well, across the whole, all sports, all three of those sports, soccer, rugby, and American football. I think the if I was to rank them, it seems, you know, in the data, American football seems to be the worst, rugby would be second, and soccer would be in third place. So most of my work has been around soccer and rugby. From the UK, we don't get much work in American football, but obviously that, you know, we follow what's happening there. I think it's interesting. I do quite a bit of work with rugby, and rugby have been very cautious about, I suppose, allowing athletes, players, to wear head protection or shoulder protection because they worry that it will change the playing behaviour of players. So players will be more aggressive when they go into tackles rather than actually trying to protect themselves. However, that is changing, and actually World Rugby, who are the governing body of rugby, they're introducing potentially like some head protection now is kind of coming in. They're going to legislate for that and the shoulder pads as well. It's a controversial issue, though, because they are worried that if players wear this protection, they'll become more aggressive. And that might lead to injuries. So it'll change the playing behavior. And I think that's what, when we look at American football, that's what we see. We see actually, because of the equipment they're wearing, it allows this potentially quite dangerous behavior to take place on the field. So that's a really kind of delicate, delicate balance at the moment. So World Rugby are introducing this idea of some head protection and shoulder protection, and lots of researchers are going to be studying how that actually changes behavior in the game. But you know, there's quite a lot of regulations around it already. If you take compare it to soccer, okay, so in soccer, this is also a topic, actually, particularly around this concept of heading a ball. So when you've got the football coming across and players head it, there's a lot of talk now about you know, can this lead to dementia in older life or mental health issues? I think that's very, not very well understood at all, actually. And I know in America, I think you've banned young players from heading footballs in training academies. I think that's true. And yes, we've been thinking about that. What's the science for that? Is it valid? Is it not? It's difficult because when you head a football, it's not a concussive injury. You know, right. It's what you call a subconcussive injury. But the idea is just these repetitive,
right,
low-level impacts that over time may cause, an injury. But that's very, very hard to measure or understand and track. So the science there is not very well understood at all. Rugby in a better place, but I think certainly American football is where it's really happening.
And those are some interesting things that you point out. One, we see in American football that there is indeed a different playing culture because of the helmets and the pads. And so one of the things that has been instituted this year in American football is the NFL leading with your head or leading with your helmet when you are tackling, especially the quarterback, is now a penalty. When a player is what they call vulnerable. So if a player is up in the air or a player is exposed on the field and you spear that player with your helmet, that's also now a penalty. And all of that is aimed at what you said, changing the behavioral culture of the players. And it's difficult. It's hard to do.
And I think this is the thing that we know. You know, I do a lot of work in impact protection and trying to make sports equipment safer. But all we can ever do is reduce the risk, because actually you could have very, very safe equipment, but if you play in the wrong way, you can injure someone, yourself or another player, by being very aggressive or behaving in a certain way. So as an engineer, I can't make sport safe. You know, I can reduce its risk, but if an athlete wants to go and do something, you know, a bit crazy, they're going to get hurt.
Right.
And this is where the sort of the legal side of it gets a bit complicated, because, you know, it can get a bit, well, you know, you get sued. Oh, you said if you're wearing this, you're not going to get an injury. Well, you know, if you behave in a certain way, you're going to get injured. Doesn't matter what you're wearing.
Wow. And also, I do have an answer for it, and that is bubble wrap. Bubble wrap. Look into it, David.
Okay. Yeah, no, seriously, I mean, there's some really exciting, just very quick, just in terms of stuff that's happening. I mean, there's some brilliant science happening here. We're doing a lot of work in what we call, it's a really cool material called auxetic foams. So a conventional material, this is amazing science. A conventional material, when you stretch that material, okay, the material gets thinner.
Thinner, right.
So as you stretch it out, it gets thinner, yeah? This is typically what happens.
Right.
And that's a conventional material. It's to do this thing we call a Poisson's ratio. It's a material characteristic. But anyway, an auxetic foam is a new idea, and we can make them in foams. And what happens is when you pull that foam, this padding material, it doesn't get thinner, it gets fatter. So it actually grows.
Wow.
It does the opposite of what you think. And what this means is when you have an impact event, normally what happens is the material flows away from the impact location. With this material, it flows towards the impact location. It's really, really an amazing thing. It's called a smart material. We call it smart material. And it's we're exploring that and how we can use it in helmet protection. We've been looking at it for baseball and cycling helmets and all sorts of different sports.
That is fascinating stuff, man. Thank you for that. That's great.
All right, Sean Larson here, question from Facebook. What effect does the shape and curvature of a snowboard have on its efficiency or path of travel down a hill?
It's a really good question. It's a bit complicated, actually. So what happens is the main thing that slows a snowboard down is the friction between the snow and the board, and actually that friction is independent of the contact area. So this is what science says. So it doesn't matter how big it is or how small it is, you'll always get the same frictional force. Because as the contact area gets smaller, the pressure gets bigger, so you get more resistive force. Mm-hmm. As the contact area bigger, the pressure gets less, and you get less resistive force. And the two kind of always balance each other out. So actually, the thing that determines how fast your snowboard goes is the friction between the snow and the board. And the only real way you're going to make that to go lower is by having a low friction, like waxing the board, or using other silicones or sprays on the board to improve the or reduce the friction. That's something we've also looked at, kind of having almost like injectors of putting like lubricants on the
like
bottom
a snail
to make it faster.
Like a snail, you turn the board into a snail. You have the lubricant out of the board.
Sort of I've forgotten what it was now. What was going on, but to try and reduce that coefficient of friction. But it's not really to do with the shape. It's to do with the friction between the two surfaces.
Cool, man. Wow, that was cool. Now, since you said that, let me ask you just a follow-up question just for out of curiosity's sake. What's your favorite sport with respect to Newtonian physics?
That's a good question. Okay, I love the pole vault, actually. Oh,
interesting.
So I think the pole vault is pretty amazing. It's an amazing thing that people do to do that, this kind of incredible gymnastic maneuver at 6 meters in the air is just totally extraordinary. But there's an incredible bit of physics behind it, right? So bear with me, I'll try and take this through really quickly. Mm-hmm. Basically, what you have is the pole vault's all about translating kinetic energy running into potential energy, which is about height. So some might call it gravitational energy, which is how high you can go. So you're turning movement into height, and of course at the top of the jump you have no speed. You've reached a zero velocity, and you've just turned all your energy into height. So you can do a calculation, right, which goes, well, what is a theoretical maximum speed I could run at? Okay, so you take Usain Bolt. Okay, how fast can he run at? So he can run at like 10 meters a second when he's sprinting, 10 second 100 meter sprint. Running at full speed, you can calculate how much energy that athlete would have, right? If they do the perfect jump, they can turn all that kinetic energy into gravitational energy. And what that does is it means you can calculate how high they could theoretically go with perfect technique if you had the perfect athlete running at full speed as fast as Usain Bolt could run. And what it turns out is that height is like 6 meters 40, okay. Which isn't that much higher than the current world record at 6 meters 18, I think it is.
Wow.
And so what we've happened is pole vaulters have reached a ceiling of physics. They can't go any higher because there's no way of putting more energy into the system. So they've kind of, physics has put us like a limit on how high they could jump. And really you have to do things like reduce gravity to go any higher.
Or would it be that somebody like you and your team would come along and engineer a pole that would be able to transfer more of that energy to increase the height?
But even if you're transferring all of it, you've still got a limit.
Wow.
You have to put more energy into the system to go any higher.
Do you improve footwear? Do you improve the running surface? Would that affect?
Wouldn't do anything.
That's what you can do. You come up against the hard rule of physics, which is you can't, energy has to go somewhere. And in this case, you're turning all the kinetic energy into gravitational energy. And that determines a maximum height.
Nice.
Maximum height.
All right. So here we go. Follow up question.
We're almost there.
Right. This is definitely a name that's going to get mangled. Feddy Gab Baldon from Instagram. You want to have another stab at that?
Forget about them.
Forget about them. Everyone's a comic. Even you. So here, Professor. See, that's why Chuck and I are a great double act. I can't read. For how long will athletes keep breaking records until they get to a biological limit in which they can't improve anymore? Will that cause the introduction of sort of biomechanical sports or athletes?
Good question. Great question.
You've got some great listeners.
We've been looking at this as well, like a lot of how performances are changing over time. And in all sports, what we're seeing is every year, performances, most sports, they go up a little bit, but the rate of increase is slowing. And if the rate of increase is slowing, it indicates that at some point it will reach a limit when it won't get any more. In some sports, we've seen no improvements in performance since the 1980s. Take female athletics. Mm-hmm. Okay, a lot of those 1980s world records are not being broken. And in fact, current performances are significantly slower than those performances in the 1980s. And I think there's, you know, you can talk about, you know, issues around doping around mm-hmm. that. I think that's yes. a very valid discussion to have. But yeah, sure. I think humans will reach, there will be limits. That's to say, you know, we shouldn't reduce what we think is possible. If you take a case of middle distance running, okay, in, you know, 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, we were seeing no improvements in performance in, say, the 10,000 meters or marathons or anything like this. And then what happened was a new population started to compete. East African runners started competing and performances really started to go up. So actually what I'm saying there is that sport, although we live in a globalized society, not every corner of the globe is able to compete in all sports. And actually, as more countries develop and are able to participate in sport, we might find that new populations enter those sports and performances will increase. So that's something to look forward to. So when we see, oh yeah, this is going to be the human limit, I'm a little bit, well, let's just be a bit cautious about that because you never know. And sure, you know, when those limits are reached, who knows what we want to do in sport? People like progress. And yeah, maybe there will be some changes, or maybe sport will change, or maybe we'll be more interested in these more complex sports, maybe like football and soccer and basketball, which aren't quite so deterministic.
Mm. So do you ever foresee a time that when it comes to human performance improvement, that we would integrate the technology directly into the athlete? For instance, a chip that might perhaps increase your production of adrenaline, or that actually stops you from producing malolactic acid after your stuff like that. Could you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you're getting into the realms of, I suppose, what's called transhumanism. So as, you know, we start to develop, integrate the technology, change our bodies in different ways. I can totally see that happening. It's kind of happening somewhat already. You know, if 100 years ago, if you'd said that a child being born today is almost certainly going to live to 100, that would be considered to be completely crazy. And so in 100 years time, you know, things might be very different for humanity as well. And, you know, that sounds a bit science fiction, but you know what? Science fiction is becoming science fact in a lot of places, in a lot of aspects of our lives. I think all these things can are possible. I think there are big ethical debates about whether we want it, what it means to be human, and who would have access and who wouldn't. You know, these things can come at a cost. Certain nations start, you know, they start building almost like these super athletes and. It, you know, that starts getting a bit crazy. So I think there's big political, ethical debates to have around that.
Cool.
Yes. Well, that is our show. Professor David James, thank you so much.
Such a pleasure to talk to you, man. Yeah, you're fantastic.
Chuck?
Yeah.
You now realize that from maybe 1980 to now, mm-hmm. so much has changed.
Absolutely.
There's so much more appliance of science, so much more technology in play that you don't quite realize is there. So, it's pretty cool when you find people like Professor developing.
He's fantastic.
And making things happen.
And I didn't even get a chance to ask him about drag force.
Good. Right. That's been Playing with Science. I've been Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
And there's no drag force here. No. Look forward to your company next time.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.